You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. And let's just say that the alternative title for this episode is the episode about how the moon is an admission-free amusement park. Yeah, so buckle up, baby, because you're in for a joyride through the sky with this one. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am over the moon excited about today's sponsor. Friend, this is my dream sponsor. The, oh my God, is this real life sponsor? The sponsor I've been dreaming about since I was a little girl, winning card-giving holidays with her reliable tearjerkers, ending fights with soul-spilling letters left on people's pillows, and surviving college by avoiding all test-taking classes and taking only essay-writing ones. No, this sponsor is not a pen or a computer or those yellow Papermate Sharpwriter number 2 mechanical pencils that you turn the tip of, which I've used religiously for 2 decades. This sponsor is the thing I've been writing up to my whole life. It's my book, my first freaking real life, will live in stores if stores ever open up again, but can live on your shelf right this second book, Party in Your Plants, which has been called in an Amazon review as the best plant-based book ever, as well as a cookbook that's way more than a cookbook, and a plant party heaven. Readers have also said that it's the best healthy living guide for your kitchen that you must purchase pronto. And so I'm here to tell you that you can promptly purchase Party in Your Plants, 100+ plant-based recipes and problem-solving strategies to help you eat healthier without hating your life, anywhere books are safely and sanitarily sold. PartyInYourPlants.com will take you to all the major retailers, or you can just hop your fingers over to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, or Walmart to buy yourself and your best friend and their best friend a copy today. That's PartyInYourPlants.com to grab a copy or 19 of my book that Amazon readers say you must add to your cookbook stack ASAP because it gets all the thumbs ups. My guest today's health journey started off really, really tough. In Jen Rasiopi's late teens and early 20s, she got 2 gynecological cancer diagnoses, which led to her having a hysterectomy, being launched into early menopause, and being prescribed tons of medications for depression, anxiety, and hormone replacements. Don't worry, though. Her story has a positive ending, which basically blew my socks from here to the moon. This was in the late 1990s when Jen ventured to San Diego in search of better healing practices, and she came across a woman who did her shockingly accurate tarot reading. From there, Jen started to dig into astrology, the planets, the moon cycles, and all things related, and it wound up being the biggest step she's ever made towards healing. Today, Jen Rasiopi is a genius in all these things and has an awesome book coming out called Cosmic Health. But before we get into all that jazz, here is your Astrology 101 class where I admit that I'm as much of an astrology newbie as anyone ever. And Jen says hilarious things like, Pluto? Yeah, he's ruthless AF. Enjoy. Jen, thank you so much for coming on the Party in My Plants podcast.
Oh my God, so fun. I'm so stoked to be here.
So stoked. Okay, first I have to ask you, since you're a representative of the sky to us and the wisdom, was it written in the stars, this COVID quarantine pandemic crisis? Did you know about this?
You know, truthfully, nobody knew what was going to happen in 2020, and every astrologer worth their grain of salt was concerned about what would happen in 2020. So astrologers have had their eye on this year for a very, very, very long time, and particularly March 2020, when things went crazy here in the States. It was right on time with these transits that had so curious. So no, I didn't know that COVID-19 would break out, but yes, we did have some indication that all hell would break loose. And, and nobody knew what or how, but certainly something was going to go awry for sure.
Okay. So let's back it up. What does that even mean? What did you just say to me? How are you finding this information? How do you guys read it? What is happening? I don't understand anything about astrology. So we are at the like 101 or like 100 or like 01 level with astrology here. So what does that mean? How did you know something was going to happen in March 2020?
Okay, well, let's first just say that, yes, this is, you might be at the 01 or 101 level.
Negative
this is
one.
Actually a kind of advanced question.
Oh.
So let me dial it back and let me give you the 101, and then we'll jump into just how one would predict catastrophe with astrology. Sound
okay.
good?
Okay, that sounds like AP.
Catastrophe prediction.
I'm like, what is a sign?
Exactly. Let's start there. So astrology is the study of corollaries. And what astrology does is it looks at what's happening in the sky and the cosmos as a reflection of what will happen in someone's life or in the lifespan of a project that, say, launched at a certain time, a wedding. You can cast astrological charts for anything, really, but mostly we do natal horoscopes. And so in astrology, there's just this premise, as above, so below, and whatever's happening in the sky at any one given moment is going to be mirrored back here on Earth. So astrology is not, I mean, there's so many different theories as to how astrology works. And the long and the short of it is nobody really knows how or why astrology works. We can't necessarily prove it. But I do love to pontificate on some of the reasons and how it could work. And really, it's just this beautiful mirror of as above, so below, and we're all connected. And when these planets and cycles that I will explain in just a second occur, there are a certain set of circumstances that we can expect to see reflected here on Earth. And, you know, the planets themselves are not doing anything. It's not like Mars and Pluto are doing these things to us humans and we are the victims of these planets. It's just to say that we are in reflection and that ultimately we're all connected. And that's the fascination of astrology. It's just looking at these corollaries, right? And so when a person is born, we can cast a chart for that event based on the time of birth, place of birth, you know, really down to the exact minute of the birth. And at that time, we can resurrect a natal horoscope or a natal chart that shows us a lot of the complexities of that moment. And then we can see how that could potentially be mirrored in someone's life, right? So that's a natal horoscope. What we're talking about in terms of how did we know something was going to happen in March of 2020, we're talking more about mundane astrology, which is astrology, politics, and time periods, and governments, and economic cycles. So we're looking at something slightly different than natal astrology, but certainly we would apply these aspects of any one individual's chart. And we are just in this time period where I study Western astrology, and I use the tropical zodiac. It's the most popular style of zodiac and astrology, but I'd like to clarify that just because there's so many different ways to be looking at these cycles. So from the perspective of the tropical zodiac and Western astrology, the cycles that we're in right now have a seriously strong Capricorn emphasis. We have a number of planets gathering in Capricorn, certainly at the start of this year. And it was this thing called the stellium, and it's when three or more planets gather in one sign, and it's almost like they become twins, right? They twin one another, or they merge their power and their intensity. And so what we knew was happening in 2020, early 2020, were Saturn, the planet of discipline, structure, the disciplinarian of the zodiac. He can make things really kind of hard when we get a Saturn activation in our life. It's typically the most popular one that we know about is a Saturn return, which happens at around 29 and a half. And it's this time in your life where you have to really look at who you are and where you're going and see if it's in alignment with your ultimate destiny. And to the extent that it's not, it's the extent that you have to make changes, and it's the extent of the challenge of that
and the
period.
Breakdown and the chaos and the hell breaking loose.
You got it, right? So that's Saturn. And then we have Pluto, who's technically not a planet. He's a dwarf planet, but in astrology, we call him a planet. And he's this like reckoning of, he's the cycle of death and rebirth, a transmutation of pain into power. Pluto is ruthless AF. Like where Saturn will give you, you know, your Saturn return or any kind of Saturn transit, Saturn your sun, Saturn square Saturn, Saturn opposite Saturn. These are all really intense times in our life. But it's not, Saturn's really never going to give you more than you can handle, right? He's going to take you to the edge of what you can handle. He's going to take you past what you think you can handle, but he's never really going to give you more than you can handle. Pluto, on the other hand, and I don't want to say Saturn gives us, I'm going to say the experience we have and the reflection of Saturn's mm-hmm. influence, right?
I love that idea, the mirror. I wrote that down and circled it. I just really like that idea that though we're mirroring an experience that's happening up there. I like that.
Yeah. And up there is, you know, it's just, we can call it up there. We can call it sky.
Yeah, where should I call it?
It's just, there's these endless cross rhythms of within rhythms happening. And that's why life can feel so sometimes in flow and sometimes so full of cacophony. It's because we live in this like universe that's deeply interconnected where things are, you know, there's rhythms inside rhythms constantly. But anyway, back to March of 2020. So Pluto is this ruthless power, and it's just going to get us in there, man. It's not going to sit on the edge. And Pluto doesn't care how much you can handle because Pluto will just blow it up. And his point, I should say, the point of the Pluto experience from the high road is you will get more than you can handle. And that's okay because sometimes we do need to learn how to handle more. And it's almost like going to the gym. If we go to the gym and we just do what we're comfortable every day, we're never, you know, that's not how muscle is built.
Right.
Muscle is built by breaking down and rebuilding and breaking down and rebuilding. Okay, so Pluto's pretty heavy and intense. He's been in Capricorn since 2008, really since the financial crisis, we've had Pluto.
What does that mean that Pluto, what does that mean it's in Capricorn? Like, what does it mean when planets are gathering in a sign? Like, I don't understand that.
Yeah. So the planets have an orbit around the sun.
Okay. This is like life 101, but that's fine. We got this.
Maybe I missed this in elementary school. We're on planet Earth. No, you wouldn't get it anyway because astrology is a logic unto itself. We're on planet Earth, right? And we're on planet Earth and we're going around the sun, right?
Yes.
But from the vantage of Earth, this is going to get tricky, but stick with me.
From the
vantage of Earth, it looks like the sun's moving around us, correct?
Right. It rises and it sets and we're just here. We're not moving.
And we're just here. I mean, we all know. And I mean, I know that there's the whole flat earth or contingency too. And they'll argue this because I've been argued by them. But we're just assuming that we're all on the same page here, that the earth is round. We have an orbit. We go around the sun. You know, this whole thing, like that's just basic science. But from the perspective of Earth, it looks like it's all happening around us. And so in astrology, in Western astrology, we have this thing called the ecliptic, which is the path of the sun around the Earth. And it's really just an optical illusion. But in that ecliptic is this, behind the ecliptic is the zodiac. And the zodiac is the 12 signs. It starts with Aries. It ends with Pisces. It begins on the spring equinox, the Northern Hemisphere spring equinox. And it basically ends right before the Northern Hemisphere spring equinox, you know, the following year. And it goes from Aries into Taurus, into Gemini, into Cancer, Leo, Virgo, Libra, Scorpio, Sag, Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces, right? And there's these 12 equally divided components of the ecliptic, which is the apparent path of the sun based on the solstice points and the equinox points. It's kind of very complicated. So I'm not going to say much more.
And those are the sun signs that you just listed, right? The Aries, Taurus, all that.
Those are the sun signs.
Which is like what I thought until very recently was the only sign. I didn't realize we have a moon sign and we have a rising sign. And those are the main like three ones, right, that actually go beyond the sun. But when we see the signs like in a newspaper, we're like, oh, I'm a Taurus. But there's so much more.
Yes, there's so much more. There's so much more. So based on these calculations and these planetary cycles around the sun, right? The planets appear to be at certain points of our zodiacal belt. And because Pluto is so far from the sun, It takes him a damn near, I mean, forever to get around the damn thing, right? I mean, it takes hundreds of years for Pluto to get around the sun based on, you know, our Earth perspective. Whereas, say, it takes Mercury will get around the sun 3 times a year, you know? So Pluto's cycle, he's very far from the sun. It takes him a very long time to move, you know, like his transits aren't very dramatic. They're very small. They're very incremental. And from the perspective of Earth, he's been in our Capricorn quadrant since 2008. Well, what happened in 2008? A massive economic collapse. Capricorn is the planet that rules, I mean, the sign that rules business and our economy and corporations. And Pluto is the kind of like this badass of a planet.
That's why he got the boot. That's why people are like, he's not even a planet. Suck it, Pluto.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's just like,
we don't want to associate with you.
Out by the Kuiper Belt, you know, but he calls a ruckus, man. It's cold, it's distant out there. He's got no sun and he's pissed off. Quite frankly, he's not like warm and fuzzy. He doesn't care if you know, enjoy his presence or not.
And are these things cyclical? Like, can you count on Pluto making its cycle or whatever at the same speed all the time?
Yes. And if you were to really track these planets in an ephemeris, which is like an astrological guide to see how quickly they're moving or where they're going to be, there's different titrations and they're at different points in their elliptical patterns might go faster or slower because it's not a perfect circle. But yeah, it's all very, very predictable. And this is how we predict things in astrology.
Got it.
And so from an astrological perspective, what we knew was going to happen in March of that happened in January of 2020, was Saturn and Pluto met up in an exact conjunction. So that means that they were the exact same degree. So we're taking Saturn, this kind of badass, who gives you as much as you can handle and only to stretch you to your limits, right? And make you get really serious. And then we're combining him with Pluto, who doesn't care what your limits are. He's ruthless and wants you to get in the core of your power. Right. So that happened in January. And because both these planets are very slow moving, they were traveling very close to one another for some time. Jupiter, the largest planet of the solar system, who moves actually much faster than Saturn or Pluto, caught up pretty quick and was like, hey, I'm at the party. I'm Jupiter. I'm making things big. I make things big. I make things big. Right. And so we've got Saturn, who's going to restructure everything. We got Pluto, who's like, well, death, rebirth. You know, what is death? You're just going to be reborn at wherever you left. You're just going to come back. It's like almost, it's the most insensitive perspective. And then we bring Jupiter in, who's like, whatever I touch, I make real big, whatever I touch, I make real big. Right. And so we have these three really important planets all gathered in Capricorn, 24 degrees, 23 degrees, you know, of Capricorn.
What does that mean?
It's just, there's 30 degrees in a sign. So they were gathering at this like really critical point. And then what happened in March is that we got fast little Mars, right? So Mars is pretty close to the sun compared to Pluto, who's all the way out there. And he, you know, it takes him about 2 years to go through the whole zodiac, but he's moving fast. He's moving fast. He moves into Capricorn and Mars is a catalyst. So here we have Jupiter, Pluto, Saturn, all together. And then who comes to the party? Mars. And that's like the match that lights the flame.
Oh,
and that
God.
Happened in, I don't know the exact dates off the top of my head, but it was basically the third week of March,
this
2020.
Is crazy.
And that's really when the pandemic, you know, went crazy here in the US and we went on lockdown.
I can't. This is nuts.
It is nuts. It is nuts. So to answer your question, nobody predicted a pandemic. I mean, maybe some people, but that wasn't like the popular opinion, you know, but everybody was like, in the astrological community, it was like, okay, how do we even talk about this? Cause you don't want to scare people.
Wow.
And it's scary to see that stuff in advance. Cause it's like, what could this possibly be? It's going to be big. You know, it's like, we just know it's going to be big and it's going to change how we're doing things. But don't leave it there, because the truth is 2020 is this year, if we're just following what astrology tells us, is this year of great mutation. So we're leaving and we're ending old cycles, and really it's paradigm shifting. And where we go at the end of this year on the other side of this is a fresh start. It's things we've never seen before. It's things we've never done before. I mean, we are really launching into the future in a very powerful way. But we're just in this whole year is just this It is gritty. It is challenging. It is game changing, paradigm shifting. I mean, I could use all the superlatives as well, but it's just, it's a year to remember.
Yeah, no kidding.
Frankly, unlike anything we've ever, our generation's ever lived through. And it's a I kept calling it like, we're going through generation defining transits before we knew like what was going to shake out. And so we're in generation defining moments, but really what we're doing in no small way is we're wrapping a historical epic that began, frankly, around the time of the Renaissance-ish. And, you know, carried us through the Industrial Revolution. And now we're moving into a new era of history, which is very different than where we've been. And that's a huge macro look at where we've been. And then we take all that information and all of us are, like I said, we're walking around with our own nativity. We're walking around with our own, these planets inside of us and our right. own natal horoscopes and our own natal charts. So we're all getting activated in these major ways in our own little universes, but this is all happening in sync with the grander universe. And damn, it's some days too much to do my job.
This is next level. Okay. How did you get into this? Like, how does somebody be able to say to me everything you just said? Like, what happened in your life that led you to this? I'm mind blown.
Yeah, you are inquisitive in such a beautiful way. I love the way you ask questions. Okay, so what all went down in my universe to make me so astro geeky, really? And it wasn't, I never woke up any one day and I was like, I'm going to be an astrologer. That sounds like a great life strategy.
Right.
Yeah. That is not how I found my way here. I mean, frankly, my experience began with total health crisis. You know, as a teenager, I had really dysfunctional menstrual cycles. And by the time I had turned 20, I had had two gynecological cancer diagnoses. A radical hysterectomy was launched into menopause before I even
turned 20,
and was utterly and completely wayward. And really, more than wayward, I was having extreme panic attacks and depressive episodes. I was completely at a loss for who I was and how to be in the world in really profound, I would say, existential ways. You know, a woman who can't procreate, that's a whole thing unto itself. But really, it was biological and it was hormonal, where I was, my body was just, I had PTSD and I had no estrogen and no, you know, just these things were gone.
Yeah.
And I was on estrogen replacement, but it wasn't the same. And, you know, I was pretty much just a wreck. And when, this was the 90s.
And how, you were 20, like 20?
Yeah, I was 18, 19. It was 19 when I had my total hysterectomy, but I had had another surgery when I was 18. And so I was 19.
Can I just say, I go around saying that I had it rough getting IBS, and like suffering in college from my IBS. So, wow. Like, way to put things into perspective here. Wow, I'm sorry you had to go through that. But it sounds like you, whatever you're about to say, you took what you went through and are making the freaking best of it. So I'm excited to hear. But I'm already connecting a dot because you said menstrual. And I know, because people are talking about it now, that the lunar stuff, the moon, correlates to our menstrual stuff. So I see the future.
Yeah, you see the future. So let me just paint the picture.
Please.
It was the 90s and I was in college. And so like if I had to do a research paper, basically I was using microfiches, which your audience might not even know.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's like this machine you go and it's like you look up old newspapers on a file reel, like through this like kind of like magnifying glass.
Oh my gosh.
So it was the 90s. I mean, I had an email account and I knew that the internet existed, but I think it was primarily fueled by the porn industry. So there were like, you know, there were no good podcasts and Well and Good and Mind Body Green and other people.
No Instagram for you.
Yeah. There were no Instagram influencers. So listen, my journey went as far as it could with mainstream Western medicine and they did a great job, but they also kind of botched me. You know, they like took out my ovaries and uterus and sent me on my way with a prescription for hormone replacement and antidepressants and just said, that's my life till I'm 50. And at that point I'd have to come off the hormone replacement, but maybe never the antidepressants. And to me, that was okay, you know, like I didn't have cancer. I was alive, right? There was like, okay, I have breath. I have breath. What can I do with this? And really serendipity and a fierce quest to heal took me out to California. And at that time, my healing journey meant knocking down doors, going to chiropractors, finding like yoga had not taken off yet. So it was like these obscure kind of like cult-like situations, not yoga, but meditation was definitely cult-like for a little bit. And then I would find these like weird, like random storefronts. I'm like, oh, you do that thing called yoga? Yoga? I got to and juices.
We have the same story. I'm losing my mind right now. My IBS story took me to LA where I discovered raw plant food before anyone knew what vegan was, and myself included. This is crazy. We must share the same chart.
We must. So I was in San Diego.
Oh, rats. So yeah, maybe your planet's a little not equal with my planet.
I was in San Diego. And then from San Diego, I moved up to Lake Tahoe. And I met
a
woman who gave me a tarot reading, and she told me all about the moon and my body. And she knew all these things about me that I didn't even know. And like, I didn't tell her anything about my story, but she kind of already knew it because she was a witch. And she taught me how to work with the phases of the moon as a way to replace my menstrual cycle. And that really worked. Wow. I mean, after I lived in sync with the rhythms of the moon for maybe a few years, and it was just like, whoa, shit's working out. I mean, it wasn't like everything. I had to do a lot of other work, got, you know, went deep into my healing journey. And then also because I was 20 something, was on that roller coaster ride of being deep in my healing journey and meditating with like the monks, and then totally rebelling and going to lots of rock concerts and doing all that as well. You know, at some point, God, it just all sort of fused into my life being really, for lack of a better word, I don't like it so much, but my life was really most in balance when I was really understanding what was happening from an astrological perspective and how it was influencing me. And I think almost like a blind person learns how to read via Braille because they don't have, you know, eyesight, like not having ovaries, like I got really in tune with the moon and all her work. And then the moon is really just a gateway for the whole universe, if you will. And I started apprenticing with a real teacher. It might have been 2008, 2009. And even when I launched my health coaching business, I was launching as a health coach and then a business coach. I never thought I would do astrology, but it was one of those things that it really just took hold in my life. I did it a little bit for clients here, and then it just like took off. I don't even know what happened. It had a life of its own.
Oh, because it's clearly your purpose.
Yeah. Well, now I can accept that. And it's really, astrology is one of those things that just keeps you humbled, because no matter how much you learn, you know, there's like, I mean, there's some master astrologers out there right now who've been doing this for like 40, 50 years who are just dropping the knowledge left and right. So I'm humbled and I'm honored to be a part of that community and really an emerging voice within the astrology community. And it's been a total life whoa to even be here. And it's a pretty awesome life path now that I fully understand it.
Ah, amazing. No wonder you've written a book. Your story is incredible. Tell us about your book briefly. What's the name? Is it, do you tell your story? Is that how you like kind of share all the information through your own narrative?
Yeah. So the book is called, thank you so much. The book is called Cosmic Health, Unlock Your Healing Magic with Astrology, Positive Psychology, and Integrative Wellness. Mm-hmm. And the book tells, like you were saying, like I'm a sun sign. I know I have a moon sign. I have a rising sign. So the book takes my perspective on health and blends it with my knowledge in astrology, and then really brings in a lot of positive psychology as well. And tells the story, tells my story, it tells some client stories, it tells the stories of the planets and their cycles. But really, the book is to help you understand your story. Mm. And it guides you through understanding these different aspects of who you are based on your natal horoscope. And, you know, it's astrology is so rich that I could write like hundreds and hundreds of pages on how to just understand your own natal horoscope. So it's not a complete understanding. Yeah. You, but it is a understanding of you through the lens of the planets and the signs. So cool. By the end of this book, you will know what your sun, moon, rising sign means, what it means to have your Mercury in certain signs, Mars in certain signs, all the planets, including Chiron, Who's not a planet, but I included him because he's the wounded healer. And then it takes really what I think is the most powerful research coming out of either integrative wellness and or positive psychology. And it marries that corollary. Remember, astrology is a study of corollaries. It's a study of things in relationship to one another. And astrology we have a lot of anecdotal evidence to support it. There's a ton of evidence to suggest astrology is a science. It is a science unto itself, but it's not a peer-reviewed science in the way that, say, positive psychology is, or a lot of the evidence-based protocols we use in integrative medicine are. And so my goal with this book was to pair the astrological wisdom with the very current modern day research so that no matter how you read this book, you're going to walk away with a deeper understanding of what it is you need to thrive. And then it's all in the backdrop of unlocking your healing magic, because honestly, we're all here to heal. And it's amazing how we will. It's amazing how we do. Our healing journey is, in my opinion, one of the most fascinating experiences we can have. And within that, there is a lot of power and latent power that can be unleashed on behalf of healing, so long as that we kind of undo the patriarchal brainwashing around what is acceptable.
Oh, no big deal. Sounds like a light read. Read it in one day in the bathtub. It sounds amazing. This episode is enthusiastically sponsored by a product that couldn't possibly float my boat more, Four Sigmatic. My boat is so floated by Four Sigmatic's mushroom drinks that any more floating would turn my boat into an airplane, because it's flying. Okay, so the first time I tried a packet of Four Sigmatic mushroom tea and a glass of hot water, I was more skeptical because of this whole mushroom thing being really trendy right now, and I'm always reluctant to hop on trend trains. Wow, we're really covering all the modes of transportation here. But I drank those shrooms and I felt truly awesome. It's hard to explain. I just felt way more awesome than I felt before I drank it. Since then, I consistently consume at least one type of shrooms a day, and it helps me know it's going to be bright, 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 sunshiny day, even when it's rainy and gray, because I am telling you, these mushrooms are magic. Although they don't make me hallucinate in a bathtub like my ex-boyfriend's famous magic mushroom experience, which in hindsight, he seemed way too proud of. But nobody's hallucinating the magical effects of these shrooms, okay? They are ultra scientifically proven to boost immunity and gut health. Yes, please and thank you. And the four different shrooms that Four Sigmatic uses most, hence the four in Four Sigmatic, wink, wink, they all do different epic things for your bod. Reishi helps you relax. Cordyceps give you a non-caffeinated energy for sports and stuff. Lion's mane, which does not come from a lion's mane, boosts your brain. And chaga is a mega charge for your immune system. I weave all four of those separate mushrooms into my life by way of the teas. That's what I'm talking about here, people, are mushroom teas that you dissolve in a packet of hot water and haya. But I also fancy myself some of their fancier shroom concoctions. They have this relaxing, thanks to the Reishi hot cocoa that I pretty much make every night with almond milk. They have matcha powder, which is the only matcha I now use. They have these magic mushroom chai latte packets that you can add to water or almond milk for a hot or iced, sweetest sippable treat. And I have to say, even though I don't drink coffee, Four Sigmatic is kind of famous for their multiple kinds of organic, much better for you coffee, even mocha mixes. So you can mocha chocolate. Okay, enough from me. I'm sorry. I just finished a mushroom matcha latte and I'm flying high. But because you listen to this podcast, thanks so much for doing that, by the way. You can save 15% off any and all Four Sigmatic shroomy stuff you'll want to buy off of their site, foursigmatic.com, using code PARTYINMYPLANTS. Or you can just go to foursigmatic, foursigmatic.com/PARTYINMYPLANTS to automatically save that 15%, baby. Oh, by the way, did I mention that I don't even really like eating mushrooms? Yeah, but now, thanks to Four Sigmatic, my body doesn't need to have shroom FOMO. Okay, again, hit up foursigmatic.com/PARTYINMYPLANTS to save 15% on this mega boat floating stuff that I always find stuffed into my pockets, purses, luggage, or my bra because I just can't get enough. Okay, when you say we're all here to heal, I just hear my husband in the back of my head being like, what is she talking about? What am I healing from? Because, I mean, I literally, you know, healed my health through a similar story to yours. You did, but he did have a health scare, but he wouldn't say like, I was here to heal. So what do you mean when you say that to a skeptic?
Healing is this fascinating thing that happens whether you're aware of it or not. You know, I mean, healing is this fascinating thing that's happening all the time. Like, we're perpetually healing. Every time we sleep, we're healing. Every time we do something restorative or nourishing, I mean, we eat our delicious nutrient dense meals as a way to facilitate our ability to thrive. And inherent in that is this constant replenishment, right? So we're always in the replenishment cycle, rest and replenishment cycle in some way, shape, or form. So we're constantly, our body's constantly healing. But even if we think about this COVID-19 crisis that we're in right now, where it's such a disaster, you know, it's just so interesting having done this work for so long and just looking at it, it's like, as bad as it seems this moment, as awful as this is, we know we're going to heal, you know? No matter how bad it is, it's actually not that bad. I mean, it is a disaster. I'm not saying it's not a disaster. I'm not undermining the amount of grief and loss and economic devastation this has caused. It's just to say that we will heal. This planet will heal. And environmentally, that's a different story. But I mean, from this crisis particularly, and in that healing process, we're going to emerge better. Mm-hmm. It's what happens when we heal. And so healing is a form of resilience. And so basically, I don't, you know, I'm not one to convert a skeptic. If someone's not relating to my work, it's not, you know, it's going to just make sense when it's meant to make sense for someone, if ever. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. I'm not for everyone.
Interesting. Okay.
What I will say is that really inherent in this book is the message of resilience. And we are all in an extreme moment of chaos. And no matter how chaotic life is, resilience and our ability to be resilient is our capacity to go through hell and come back better and actually come back stronger and more powerful, and more capable, and more in tune with who we are in a state of post-traumatic growth, which is this expansive state on the other side of chaos. And so you're not here right now if you're not learning resilience in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. And so at the core of the book is a message of resilience.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So you don't care for skeptics. Like, you don't try to convert people. You're not like preaching, you know, follow the planet, look at your astrology, it's life changer. Because I have a question. What do you say to people who are skeptics? But I guess you would say, go away and come back if you want. Like, you're welcome anytime.
I mean, it's like, I think people, and this is me getting on my soapbox for just a moment, if you don't mind.
Please.
I think that people get triggered by skeptics in a way where it's like, oh, well, if they don't believe in me, do I believe in myself? Or the astrology has to be right. Astrology doesn't have to be right. Nothing has to be right. Everyone's subjective logic is sculpted through so many different nuances of their upbringing, their epigenetics, their education, you know, and so their subjective logic is correct. And quite frankly, astrology, there's so many holes in how astrology works, you know, like it's not, like I was saying, it's not this airtight, evidence-based theory.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what astrology is. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence. And
that's interesting because it's an ology, which is the study of, right? So it sounds like it would be, you know, more a fish.
Oh, no, it is in its own way. I mean, astrology has been around since, I mean, for forever. You know, I mean, think about this. Every single society and culture has some form of astrology, and there is not one like a little bit of humanity that at some point didn't or doesn't still look to the stars for guidance. Hmm. So it is our oldest science. But I'm talking about like wasting my breath arguing with someone who just wants to prove me wrong.
Yeah.
Like, why? Why would I do that?
Right.
I have more respect for my time. And frankly, I don't care. Right. You know, astrology is... it is so fascinating and it's such a cool thing. It's endlessly fascinating, but it's not everyone's going to be open to it. And I think we in the wellness world particularly would benefit from being peaceful around, you know, what works for us and not needing everyone to do what we do to feel like we're okay with our own plan.
Yes.
You know, and I think that there's a lot of that in the wellness world around, like, that's why things get so trendy and fad driven, is because there's a herd mentality and it's like, wants to get left out. And if you're not doing this, you're left out, or, you know, or this is what's working. I don't know. And the other thing about astrology, and I think that this is one of the biggest gifts of it, is once you get astrology, you realize, like, people are who they are, you know? And that's one of the gifts of astrology, is like, oh, I mean, I can explain the skeptic probably through their astrological chart.
Yeah.
You know, that's who they are. That's their prototype.
You're right. Yes, that makes sense.
Why would I engage that? You know?
Oh my God. Yes. Okay. So to that point then, like, what happens, I guess, if someone like fights their astrological fate? I mean, I don't know, like, if we are who we are, that kind of brings in the idea of free will and alignment versus misalignment. I mean, like, I don't know, just say something about that. Like, if you're born one way, like, I'm a rising Gemini, I'm a Taurus, I don't remember what my other sign is. I can send you my chart, I have it right here. But like, if I try to, like, a rising Gemini is somebody that's really, like, bubbly and energetic on the surface, right?
Yeah. A Gemini rising. Yeah.
Yeah. What if I was told by my parents, like, don't be that way. Like, we are calm, quiet, reserved people. And they, you know, tried to make me that way. Like, can you fight your astrological fate is the question I have settled on.
Okay. So can you fight your astrological fate? Oh,
we got there.
I love your question. Oh, so juicy. It's so juicy. Sure. You can fight anything. Will you win? That's another question. And I think that, you know, one of the gifts of astrology is learning to love who you are. Mm-hmm. And learning to, one of my teachers says, make crazy normal, make your crazy okay, like, make your crazy normal so that you don't have to fight it.
And, like, understand why you are the way you are.
Oh,
right.
And that's why astrology and health go hand in hand, because until you know who you are, how can you be who you are? I mean, there's just, you know.
Well, what do you mean by health? Like, what do you mean by health when you say health like that?
Yeah, I just mean, like, I believe that at the core of every health journey is a spiritual and emotional experience. Mm-hmm. And until we get right with our emotions, and I shouldn't say until, I said we take care of our physical body and take care of our emotional health and take care of our spiritual health. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a Gemini rising is going to have a very different set of needs than, say, a Pisces rising. And until you know that, like, hey, if I'm not communicating a lot, if I'm not networking, if I'm not given the opportunity to cross-pollinate all these ideas and synthesize it in new and exciting ways and network and bring people together, I'm not happy. And when I'm not happy, I overeat. I don't take care of myself. I, you know, sabotage with the food and whatever, or alcohol, or whatever.
Hence why I'm really struggling right now being isolated.
Yeah,
it sucks. My IBS is, like, out of control, and I'm not doing so hot for that exact reason. Ah!
Yeah.
That's so awesome. I get it. I get the health correlation now. Thank you.
So it's just really important that we know who we are and we be who we are. And that's a never ending journey, right? We're never quite done evolving, but we do get a sense of what we need in a very organic, basic way. And our astrology chart tells us that. Now, can we not do our fate? I just don't believe that we cannot not do our fate. We're doing our fate all the time. But can we optimize that? Can we take it to the next level? Absolutely. Clearly, as a 19, 20-year-old, I could have just said, sure, I'll take the antidepressants.
Yeah.
And the synthetic hormonal replacement for the rest of my life, never find a spiritual purpose. And with, you know, like, I could have accepted, I could have also died. I mean, that was like, I had very radical things happen to my body where I could have just died on the spot. Yeah. And, but I didn't, I persevered through cancer and I found ways of living in the world that animated my chart and my potential at a higher level than just, say, victim consciousness. So we can do our chart at victim consciousness. And that's like the popcorn free movie. You know, it's like we can just show up and get the movie, but not have any of the adornments that go along with it. And then we can do the work on our personal development journey to really become our brightest, shiniest, healthiest, most proud version of ourselves. that's where our free will comes in, right? Do we want to animate our highest potential or not? Mm-hmm. But no matter what, I was going to be born who I was with the issues I had, to the parents I had, to the situation I was born in. There's no getting out of that. I was a girl, a middle child, born in the 70s. You know, I can change my sexual identity. And that's obviously something I can do, animate a different side of my personality. But really, my fate, I couldn't unwrite that script of who my parents were and where the circumstances and situations and my cancer. And, you know, these are things that I was born into. That's kind of my deal. But how I respond to them and how I live my life in response to that is entirely in my own hands. And so astrology gives us our, what I call in the book, cosmic curriculum. We have this cosmic curriculum, and then we can either be good students of it or be in total rejection of it. And I just think the more we're in total rejection of it, the harder things get.
And the sicker we'll be. I mean, a lot of sickness comes from that internal stress or that just misalignment.
100%. Yeah. So back. Healing is our natural path is to say this path of resilience is really important, but you know, the number, and I don't believe stress in and of itself is a bad thing. I think we need stress to grow. And that's why we constantly are healing too, because we're constantly, if you're an ambitious go-getter, you're putting yourself in stressful conditions all the time for in the name of growth. And so being resilient is really important to that point. But ultimately, you know, the biggest stress, the most toxic stress we could ever live with is not living the truth of who we are, is denying our core values, our core identity. And let me tell you, that's 90 million times more chronic than the acute stress you're going to feel if you're stuck in traffic on the way to an important meeting.
Oh, yes. I agree. It's the chronic stress that kills us.
It's the chronic stress.
Yeah.
When we don't accept our fate and we are in rejection and we're angry and we don't like who we are and we're not doing anything to fix it, or we're like, you know, I mean, some of us are going to thrive on this, you know, on a plant-based diet. Some of us aren't, but like until we know ourselves, you know, just trying on everyone else's maybe that worked for them, it should work for me situation. It doesn't quite work. And there's a lot of inherent stress in needing to perform who we are versus who we are. And so astrology is just an inroad to being who you are rather than performing who you think you need to be.
So cool. It's like a secret. It's like a shortcut almost. It's like, you know, you're told who you are, so you don't have to guess.
But the other thing is nobody knows you better than you. And it's always an opportunity to see, do you relate to this information?
Yes, that was a question I have here that was next off the tip of my tongue. What if you read about your sign and it doesn't resonate?
Yeah.
What happens? Are you wrong?
Are you wrong? Is astrology wrong?
Yeah.
Who's wrong?
Who's wrong?
Let me first just say you are much more than your sun sign. So the sun sign is just kind of like, think about it. If you were born this time of year, and it's just your birthday. When was your birthday?
April 27th.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I share it with Lizzo. And that gave me so much affirmation about astrology that Lizzo and I share a birthday. Because I love Lizzo.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's a cool.
And Jesse, my husband, shares a birthday with Jennifer Aniston, and they're the two loves of my life. So just saying.
Just saying. See, sounds cosmic. Sounds cosmic. But yeah, so you're born in the season of Taurus, right? And that's what a sun sign is. It's like, what season were you born in? But, you know, that's like, it's a seasonal description, really. It's not a personal description. So we really want to know the complexities of your rising sign, your moon sign, and then all the other pieces of your chart to really get that. So first step would be, if you don't identify with your sun sign, keep going, learn more if you're interested. And then the other thing here that could really just happen is that there's so many different ways for astrology to be described. You might not be resonating with that person's ability to describe those signs. And so, you know, keep an open mind, but ultimately, like, go study the Enneagram, go get your numerology done, go, you know, find out there's so many personality type things that astrology might just not click for you right now in the way that you need to. I, for the longest time, was like, this Gemini thing, because I'm a Gemini sun, was just like, didn't really quite totally get, like, I didn't really totally identify with that. I have so much earth in my chart, and Gemini is all about like here and there and gone tomorrow. And like, you know, and I'm like uber earthy. My chart is so much earth in it that I didn't quite get that until I understood the totality of my chart in a deeper way. So if astrology is interesting to you and you don't agree with how you're being described, do not oblige yourself to agree with astrology. You know yourself better than anyone else. But I would say just keep an open mind and look at the deeper complexities within your chart. Keep going and see, something will click if it's meant to for you around the study of astrology.
That's awesome. Yeah, the Gemini thing, the Gemini rising really clicked for me. Because I was like, Taurus, I mean, I don't know. I'm not that stubborn. That's like the cliche with Taurus, right?
That's the cliche, but Taurus is really here to help us feel nourished. You know, Taurus.
Oh, well, that's on brand.
Yeah, it's ridiculously on brand. But that's my point too, is that these descriptions go so superficial.
Right.
You know, it's like Taurus, the bull, stubborn, Gemini, the twin, duplicitous, you know, it's like Cancer, nurturer, mother. It's like, well, actually, there's so many nuances to these descriptions as well. But yeah, so you resonated more with your rising sign than your sun sign.
Yeah, there you go.
And that makes more sense because your rising sign is your soul. It's what you're rising to. Mm. Your sun sign is just the season you were born in. And then your moon sign is your interior. It's who you really, it's your emotional need. And it says a lot about maybe your matrilineal line in your family, what you've inherited from your mom. It could tell us a lot about like just how you emotionally respond to things, but it's your inner core. Your moon sign. So we think of the sun sign kind of like as the outer ring in terms of like the overall general time of year you were born. And then your rising sign is that constellation rising on the eastern horizon the moment you took your first breath, which can typically sound like that's the package, you know, like that's what people see, the exterior. And that's one part of the rising sign. But I really look at the rising sign, the ascendant, as what are you rising to? Who are you becoming? And it's the message of your deeper truth. And then the moon is your interior core personality. So I, yeah, it's complex.
Yes. Yeah. To put it lightly. Okay. What is up with the moon? So you're always like, everyone's always like, it's a new moon or it's whatever moon, the different phases align with the moon, new moon guys, burn stuff or new stuff. Make an argument to me, please. I'm not a skeptic. I'm curious. So I'm eager for the information. Why the moon? What do we do? How do we align? It has nothing really to do with our astrological chart, right? We can just start moving and grooving with the moon today, correct?
Yeah.
So yeah, tell me everything.
The moon is a admission-free amusement park, truly.
Have you ever said that before? Because if not, that has to be a post.
No, I literally have never said that.
There you go, please. There
you go. But yeah, basically the moon is, you know, it's so what is a moon? It's, you know, it's this, it's basically one of the things that gives us gravity, right? So the moon is our satellite here on Earth, and the moon revolves around the Earth while the Earth spins on its axis. We have a circadian rhythm, a 24-hour rhythm that's dictated by the rising and the setting of the sun, which we know is really our turning on the axis as we go around the sun in our ellipses. But we say the sun rises and the sun sets. And then the moon is our satellite. And so the moon and the sun are always in a dance where we're either, the moon is in a position where it can receive the sunlight and reflect it back to us. And when the moon can receive all the sunlight and reflect it back to us in the middle of the night, it's called the full moon. Mm. And that's just because the sun and the moon are opposing one another in the sky. And so just think about it. The sun's like a flashlight shining on the moon, and the moon is just this rock up in space that's like somehow keeping us on the planet via gravity, and it's rising the tides and the, you know, I mean, our full and new moon, I mean, our high tide and low tide are all controlled by the moon. And when we have a new moon and full moon, we have our strongest tides. And when we have the quarter moons, we have our weakest tides. So the waves are more dramatic at a new moon and full moon than they are at any other time in the lunar cycle because of the moon's gravitational pull on the Earth. But surely the moon is when the moon is on one position, we have low tide. When the moon is on another position, we have high tide every single day based on our turning, these cycles that we're in.
And it depends where you're located, right? It's not like a Massachusetts ocean is not going to share a California ocean tide. Like it's not, it's depending on how you're positioned, right?
Well, yes. No, you mean like when we're having high tide and low tide?
And no, like the full moon. Well, I guess It's a full moon. Oh my God, this is going to be the, I'm so sorry. This is the stupidest question.
All right, let me just interrupt. Okay. Yes. It's a full moon for everyone. And no matter your time zone, your hemisphere. It's a full moon
sorry,
in New Jersey.
Guys.
It's a full moon
I'm
in Guatemala.
Really sorry. I'm sorry. No, that's no, probably no, no. who learned that in third
I
grade.
I love this question because honestly, it's like, it's this thing that no one really ever talks about, but it's my job to talk about this. Okay. So feel no fear here. This is what I'm here to do. I am the moon's PR person. And I got you, girl. I got
Thanks.
You. Okay. So yeah. So, I don't know if it's a, you know, when it's a high tide, if it's a high tide everywhere, I honestly don't think it is, but what I do know is that when it's a full moon everywhere. And so everywhere is having more dramatic, rising and falling of the high tide and the low tide are most extreme during a new moon and full moon all around the world. And so if we think of the sun's this flashlight and the moon is in a position where it's like, oh, like I'm in the spotlight, right? Mm-hmm. And then because the moon's in the spotlight, we see the moon because the sun is shining its light on the moon and it's the spotlight. Right. And that's all a full moon is. A full moon is the time of month where the moon is in a position relative to the sun, where the sun is like doing its thing because it's the star and it's just always shining its light. You know, the sun is the light and the moon's in a position where it can receive that light and reflect it back to us on Earth.
And what does a new moon look like to us?
So a new moon is zero moon in the sky.
That's what I thought you were going to say, but I don't know if I've ever seen no moon.
Oh, girl, you have.
There's been nights where there's just no moon, I guess. I thought it was just like cloudy.
No.
I am AWOL from the world. I am very excited. This is great. I've never been able to ask someone these basic questions, and it's always been blocking me between, you know, coming in the way of me doing any of this stuff because I need this elementary information. So thank you.
Girl, I got you. And and we all need it. You know, it's like until you like really pay attention to this stuff, it's like, why, you know what I mean? It's like, who cares?
Right.
What's the moon got to do with it? Until you realize the moon's got a lot to do. But yeah, so the new moon happens when the sun and the moon are at the same degree in the sky. Kind of like if we go back to that Pluto, Saturn, Jupiter conversation, they were all aligned at the same degree. So it made them really potent. Mm-hmm. When the sun and the moon are at the same degree, when there's distance between them, but there's not that opposition isn't happening. So we can't receive the moon, the sun's light to reflect us back. They're just together. So the distance between them is less. Therefore we don't see the moon. Mm. So a new moon is a dark moon. We don't have a night sky with the moon in it. And that's actually one of my favorite times of the month. And aside from my spiritual practices that are actually very prescriptive for that time, mainly because I love to see stars. And when there's no moon in the sky, you can really see those stars.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's not an obstructed sky at that time. The dark moon, the stars are shining bright. And I love it.
Where do you live? Are you in San Francisco?
No, but funny you ask. I used to live in San Francisco for a long time.
Okay.
I'm in Hudson, New York. So I'm just asking.
Oh, you're my neighbor. Well, I'm in Pound Ridge.
Oh,
yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, cool. I thought you were in San Francisco.
I get down with the country.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about the sky. I'm like, going to go look tonight. What's the moon today?
Today? Oh my God, you're catching me off. We just had the full moon and we're going into the waning moon. It's the waning gibbous moon.
Okay. I believe you.
We're in the waning.
So waning and waxing is just when it's half, you know, like half full, half empty. Waning is when it's waning is
so
less.
So this is what happens. Think of earwax. It's kind of gross.
Okay.
But so we have the new moon. The new moon is aligned. The sun and the moon are aligned. And then the moon starts to, because the moon is moving fast, right? The moon is our closest satellite. He's going fast, 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 fast. The moon is moving away from the sun. And now we're incrementally seeing more and more moon every night. So the moon is growing. It's waxing, kind of like earwax. Like you want to get the wax out of your ears. Kind of gross. Anyway, the moon is waxing. And then we have the waxing quarter moon, which is the halfway point between the new moon and the full moon. And then we have the full moon. And then we have the waning. So the moon is losing light. It's moving away from the sun and going smaller. And this is moon month, moon. You know, the month is based off of the moon. That's how we get a month. So one lunar cycle is the length you know, slightly shorter than a typical month. But because we don't live on a lunar calendar, we live on a solar calendar. We start the month on the 1st, and the new moon might be on like the 10th or the 15th or the 22nd. Mm-hmm. And so that new moon is the beginning of a new cycle. But because we don't keep a calendar that way, you have to turn to astrologers and now all the wellness people who are also really into this, who will tell you mm-hmm. that it's the new moon, which is the beginning of the cycle.
So is that like kind of your new month? Like, do you kind of go that way with the calendar? Is that like your calendar?
Well, no. My calendar is very typical because I live in the typical world.
Well, I mean, like, do you plan your life around the lunar calendar? You're like your emotional life.
Yes. I work very succinctly with the lunar phases on an energetic and an emotional level. And I set intentions with the new moon always. And then I work with those new moons. So I set my goals or my prayers or my spiritual I make a spiritual devotion every new moon. And then that's my prayer for that lunar cycle. And I work with it in different ways. I'll tweak it as I move through the lunar cycle. But what I do, what I say on that new moon, that is the theme of that lunar cycle. It is my devotion. It is my spiritual practice.
Is that a good beginner? Is that a good, like, if I want to start grooving with the moon, is that a good first step? Like on the new moon night when there's no moon in the sky, I go out there and look up there at the stars and say, all right, Talia, this month you're going to really focus on XYZ and really embody ABC. And like, is that a good beginning place?
Oh my God, girl. You be grooving.
grooving and mooning.
you be mooning. you be mooning hard. No, I mean, that's basically the whole jam.
I mean, I see this on Instagram all the time. You know, everyone's like posting their like new moon intentions or whatever. And I'm just like, actually, no, they're doing their month intent. I don't know what's happening on Instagram. People maybe do both.
People are becoming mystically expanded by paying attention to the cycles of the moon, which is another thing that happens, right? So the moon rules our subconscious. And so the very practical thing is like set your goals with the moon. Yeah. Why wait till the new year? Why wait till your birthday to think that those aren't even necessarily when your birthday is, but the new year isn't necessarily astrologically aligned. It's just like the first of the new year, the first of January.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's when we do all our intention setting and our visioning and we bring out all of our manifestation skills. And then like 3 weeks later, we forget and we move on. But every single month, there's this new moon. And that's actually a very magical portal where you can start to set intentions and do things in sync with the rhythms of the universe. So you're planting your seeds at the right time. And a very masculine side of that is like, okay, I'm going to goal set. I'm going to project manage. I'm going to use this moon as an anchor to review where I was and where I'm going next. And do I feel aligned? And what do I need to change so that my spiritual health and my emotional health combine so I have really great physical health? And then the feminine side of this is much different in that, you know, it's like the moon rules our subconscious and rules our intuition. And the more we tune into it, the more we're awakening our subconscious and our intuition. And the more that, you know, we're going to be moved in ways we don't even know we need to be, that there's a certain level of magic that comes in with all this, because what are we here to do? We're here to heal. And we start tuning into these natural rhythms that guide our lives. Our healing process is going to be expedited in ways that are beyond that set of things you're saying on the new moon. So it's very mystical. And the whole purpose is to awaken the latent faculties of intuition within oneself so that you are being guided by in communion with your inner voice and basically the cosmos.
Man. Wow. Are you supposed to do anything cool on the full moon or not really?
Oh no, the full moon, it's, you know, I'm a big fan of people discovering how they feel around these cycles rather than me, the expert, tell you how to feel.
Ugh, just tell me how to feel.
My first suggestion would be to track a moon cycle and see how you feel at the full moon. For me, when I was dealing with anxiety and depression and PTSD, I was really, those were my worst moments. Like the full moon made me crazy. And I shouldn't say that in jest because I was, you know, technically mentally ill, and that's something many of us deal with, right? Like I was in definite, like serious mental illness at that time. But I knew that my symptoms were exasperated in a way that were almost overwhelming for me at the time of the full moon. So my full moon practice has always been to scaffold, to have less exposure at that time, maybe stay in more, you know, do like different grounding routines and rituals, ways to prioritize sleep, because my sleep gets disturbed at the full moon. I can't sleep as well. My sleep goes off, everything goes off. So for me on a health level, like the full moon was kind of it was the wild card of my month. I didn't know what was going to happen. But once I learned that, I understand that my symptoms were exasperated at the time of the full moon. And I've even dealt with severe SIBO and these other like bacterial things. And because our circadian rhythms are such that we're in constant correspondence with light. And we also have these bacteria that are constantly in correspondence with light too. It's like cravings can be different at the full moon. You know, I mean, we can be totally different people at the time of the full moon than we are in the new moon, because we're activated in a way that we're not at the new moon. So I would say the first thing first is to just understand yourself. But, you know, from a spiritual perspective, if we're planting seeds of new beginnings with the new moon at the full moon, we especially want to just see what's being revealed to us. And if I was to go to a party, if I could plan a party at any time of the month, I'd probably want to do the party right around the waxing gibbous or the waning gibbous moon, or maybe even the full moon, depending on how crazy I wanted the party to get. It's like engaging social activities, going to concerts, that sort of thing is like really fun at the full moon. Doing maybe a more high powered workout, more energy, engaging in deeper creative work, because now I have, you know, I don't suffer from anxiety, depression the way that I did 20 years ago. For me now that I look to the moon for creative expansion, socializing, you know, my libido might be different. My sexual response might feel different. My mystical aptitude for feeling power in my body might feel different. So I play with that.
So cool. Okay. Well, I'm going to look at the moon. I'm going to get a little calendar and just see or Google it. Do you have it on your site? How do I see the phases of the moon?
Right. So how do you see the phases of the moon? I mean, I don't personally have a calendar of that on my site. But there are so many calendars that you can get that have that. And as a matter of fact, good old Google will let you put it on your calendar through Google.
Oh. So you can just— oh my God, I can sync it with my work activities.
You got it, girl.
Wow. Like it's really,
we are, you know, for us, oppressed, repressed, and denied our earth-based spiritual practices as they have been for so long, we actually have a lot of tools at our fingertips, especially now. But certainly Google will be able to tell you when there's a new moon, a full moon, a waxing quarter, and a waning quarter moon. And those are the big things to pay attention to, because that's basically the 4 weeks of the cycle laid out right there. And then once you start to get that, then you can go from there into like, what sign is the moon in, you know? But I wouldn't start talking about moon signs until you got moon phases down, and that takes about a month.
And then we go to your Instagram, because you post about the moon signs.
Yes. And then you can come to my Instagram, you can get my book, you can do lots of things. And certainly there's a million journals out there that have this sort of stuff. One of my favorites is Wee Moon. It's been around for forever. And, you know, you could just go to your metaphysical bookstore and pick up a calendar that has this sort of information available in it and keep it. And, you know, just track. It's like your little thing. And then, you know, for those of you who are wondering how this all aligns with your menstrual cycle, mm-hmm. your menstrual cycle has four phases, just like the moon. It has your bleed, your follicular phase, which is the waxing phase of the moon, the ovulatory phase of the moon, which mirrors the full moon. It's the same energy of the full moon, whereas like the follicular phase mirrors the energy of the waxing moon. Then your luteal phase, which is the time of month where we would typically call PMS, or, you know, it's after you've ovulated. And if you didn't get pregnant, you'll go through the luteal phase. Well, that mirrors the energy and the same, I would say, the same implications as a waning moon. And then we come back to the new moon. So it's really cool to see when you're bleeding, when you're ovulating, and then what phase of the moon it's in. You know, roughly a period on average is 29 days. The moon cycle is always 29 and a half days. And so there's that symbolic representation of one another. The female body is actually very lunar.
Yeah, that blew my mind when I learned that. I learned that from Sarah Jenks, who I know you, aren't you her like go-to astrologer?
Yeah, Sarah Jenks and I are very close friends. We're sisters. And I coached Sarah when she was transitioning from doing full-time body, food, and intuitive eating stuff into finding her spiritual voice. So I did some astrology with her, and even her and her husband, her and her family, way back when, that was several years ago, and supported her in finding her vision and voice for this new iteration of her spiritual expression. So yeah, but Sarah and I have transitioned our relationship into certainly colleagues, but where I would consider Sarah one of my best friends and dear sisters.
Oh, she's wonderful. She's wonderful. Well, how does astrology then fit into business? Because I mean, and we don't have time to go into all that, but I know that's really what you help people do. You help women tap into their astrological powers and magic and then use it to thrive in business and not burn out and fall apart and kill it. So how does one lead to the other? I mean, they seem like separate planets, no pun intended. How do you merge them?
Yeah. So, what's the easiest way to say this? We all have cycles and seasons. And so an astrology chart is really a roadmap of who you are. So first we want to look at who you are. And, you know, to use Sarah as an example, when I did her chart, I was like, there's the spiritual calling. And she's like, what? You know, and she writes about this in her blog. So it's okay that I say this because it's public. But, you know, I was like, you have this thing around bringing women together in spiritually that I think, you know, you spiritual teaching in there somewhere. And for her at that time, it was very foreign concept. But now, you know, she's precisely doing that. And so first of all, it's just looking at your chart and understanding, are you in alignment with your highest potential? Or are you fighting it? Mm. So the best thing you can do for any kind of business thing is to look at where your strengths are and optimize them. So that's sort of like the basics. Are you in alignment? And then once we get you and you're going and you're doing your things, it's like, oh, well, what are my seasons? What cycles am I in? Am I in a cycle that should be really about visibility? Am I in a cycle that should be really about money and or am I a cycle that's about systems and planting a lot of seeds that won't bloom? You know, there's nothing more frustrating than planting all your seeds and then your crops don't bloom. And you're like, why did I do something wrong? Did I not have the right formula? Why is nothing working? But if we look at your chart, it's like, well, you're not in a season of blooming. So, you know, like that comes in 6 months. What are you going to do until then? Or just you know what I mean? Like We've got this whole Pluto, Jupiter, Saturn thing happening. And like, quite frankly, it was really hard to do this work for a little bit. Cause I was like, you know, like everyone starts the year off with their big plans. And I'm like, well, that's not really going to be what that, you know, like, so there's forecasting is basically what I'm saying. So we use it as a forecasting tool and we make sure that you're not planting your seeds at barren times. Mm-hmm. And we make sure that you're planting the right crops. Are these your crops? Are these the crops you're supposed to grow? We make sure that, you know, you're doing things at a time when what you're doing is in alignment with the season and the cycle that you're in so that you're not fighting. You're just not fighting the rhythm. You're riding the rhythm. And so it's really about harmonizing and synthesizing your interior with your exterior and doing things in alignment with what's best. Now, I say this with a caveat because I'm an astrologer and I'm a businesswoman. And business is really the act of consistency. And astrology is really the thing that, like, there's a lot of blackout times, you know, there's like a lot of times where it's like, that's just contraindicated to be doing that work. But I'm a businesswoman and I got a Virgo moon and I, you know, I'm at it every day regardless. So I just want you to know that astrology will often indicate contraindications and it's good to know that there are contraindications. And you can, if you want, not do anything when things are contraindicated. But I also think that business is requires quite a bit of resilience. And it's nice to know, like, oh, I'm doing something right now that's contraindicated. How can I scaffold right now? Because I know that what I'm learning is this deeper thing and it's not really going to play out in this like light and bright, easy, fairy way that I would. But I'm not going to stop because I'm tenacious and I keep going. And business is really about consistency. And so it's just the flip side is to know how you stay in alignment when everything's out of alignment, you know, just that like this is a season of chaos. Doesn't mean give up. Doesn't mean you won't have crops.
It right. It's also just telling you like you can keep going, but it's going to be a little harder than if all the planets aligned perfectly for you right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm launching a book and I have some of the most hellacious aspects in my natal chart that I'll probably ever have in my whole life. I'm going through one of the hardest times my soul has ever seen and happened for a little bit. And maybe there'll be another podcast or some other time where I go public about all that. But for now, it's kind of mum's the word. But like, you know, truth be told, my life is hard right now. But here's the gift of astrology. I know, and I knew this for forever, and it's not personal, you know, and like I can understand like, hey, this is what I'm learning. This is my season. And because I know that, I'm not going to throw in the towel.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Oh, so, okay. In closing, there's the moon, the lunar logic, which everybody is, you know, privy to. Just download it on your Google calendar and you can sync up with the moon and understand how it affects you and run out there on the new moon and set crazy intentions. Then there's our natal chart that is a snapshot of the sky right when we were born. And that a professional like you would really do a deep dive into and tell us kind of what that means about who we are as a human. And then there's this other thing, I don't know what you call it, it's like prediction or whatever, where, you know, you guys are saying all this stuff happened in March, and then you're saying that this is what's all the planets doing this in May, and that's what, forecasting?
You got it.
Oh my God. I'm a pro now. Did I pass?
Yeah, girl, you got it. So I would just add one thing. So the snapshot of the sky, the moment you took your first breath, is your natal horoscope. And then we could track those planets the same way for our society, for our government, for our politics, for, you know, whatever, for a pandemic. And that's called mundane astrology. So mundane is like the mundane things. Natal is your personal. And then forecasting is this ability to take what's happening in the sky, like a weather report, and be like, oh, well, what will that be like here on Earth? And that's forecasting. And then the predictive element, I'm not really a predictive astrologer. I'm really not. Like, I'm more of a archetypal humanistic astrologer where I just want to look at the core of who you are. But certainly there's elements of predictive technique in my chart. And then there's fabulous predictive astrologers out there blowing up the scene right now, like Ann Ortley, and there's just an amazing, amazing, amazing cast of crew. Like I said, I'm very humbled to be in their presence because they are just such dynamite astrologers. So I guess my last piece there is like, if you're into astrology, explore it wide. Certainly come to my site. You can download my Lunar Logic Guide, which is going to teach you about the phases of the moon and your sun sign. And that's a free offer that I have. But, you know, look wide, because there's some really brilliant astrologers out there, and we are in a really awesome time for this work. And I just wanted to say shout out to my community because, woo, man, they're doing awesome work.
Woohoo! Not as awesome as you, though, but that's just my personal opinion. But what you do is you help, like, you would help me take my birth chart and then use the forecasting to kind of tell me how to thrive based on the way I am, based on the way life is going, right?
You got it.
Okay. So if somebody else wanted to do that with you, is that a thing you offer for
it
money?
It is. It is a thing I offer for money. it is primarily how I make my money.
There you go.
In addition to writing and speaking and coaching. But yeah, it's over on my website. So jenniferratziob.com. And you guys can check that out. It's called, right now, it's under the title Chart Your Success. Get it? We're going to chart your success.
I get it. Wah, wah.
but I do have a whole new business, website. I have a whole new website coming out, but that won't come out for a little later this year. So yeah.
Phenomenal. And I have to ask you, what is your favorite plant to eat?
Oh, girl. Okay. Let me think about this.
Oh, now I stumped you.
There's so many. I mean, I really like arugula.
Oh, I love arugula.
Oh, girl.
It's one of my favorites too. I've never said that as like my favorite, but I love it.
I love, you know what my favorite is though?
What?
Fennel.
Oh, yum. Fennel,
that is my fave.
What do you do with fennel? Roast it, raw, salad?
Yeah. You know what? I like to juice it.
I was going to say juice it. That's good too.
Juicing fennel is one of my faves, but certainly, you know, like putting it and roasting it with, say, a piece of salmon, or, you know, just a nice side. Mm. Nice side of fennel. Oh, it's just so good on my tummy.
Is there like an astrology diet? Like, can you use your chart to tell, like, to pair it with what foods are good for you? Or is that just nuts?
Okay, this is why I do that. And then we're going to overload your listeners.
Okay, this is the last thing. And then we'll go.
This is my last piece of tidbit of advice. So I wrote a book called Cosmic Health. And clearly I could have offered a lot of dietary information because, you know, I got a Virgo moon. I got a sensitive tummy. That fennel does me fine, right? And there's all these little tricks around figuring out what you need. But here's why I didn't do that. Because getting in your 3 to 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day and eating adequate protein and getting healthy fats and not eating all the sugar and staying away from the processed foods is a full-time job in and of itself. And we Westerners are either in denial of our diet and just do whatever, which I think is actually a great strategy is from the intuitive eating perspective, or we are like maybe a little too trying to figure it out, that sort of thing. And I don't want to overwhelm people with like needing to eat for their sun sign, because orthorexia is like a real thing. I've seen a lot of that in my practice. And I had no idea really until I became a woman's coach, how much women really struggle with dietary guideline obsession and or clean health. Yeah. So I'm just very sensitive to that. So the answer is yes. Once you know your astrology and you know your sensitivities and you know your proclivities, you can devise your diet to be reflective of your astrological constitution. But until you're in a really healthy place with your soul and your body and your diet and food in general, don't worry about it.
Oh my God. I'm so hungry to know more. So I will be contacting you privately. Okay. This was tremendous. This was phenomenal. Again, where should people go if they're hungry for more?
Yeah. So I have an Instagram account, which you mentioned, at Jen Raciopi, JENN, Jen, RACIOPPI, or my website, which is Jennifer, full name, last name, RACIOPPI. And then my book will be coming out, and that'll be cosmichealthbook.com.
Oh, that's all I have to
say.
Thank
you. Bravo. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. This is so fun.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I am still counting my lucky stars that I had this earth-shattering, star-shootingly awesome chat with Jen. After recording it, I was so over the moon excited that I immediately added the lunar calendar to my Google Cal. And well, that's kind of it for now. But each time I see a different moon phase on my calendar, I'm trying to notice how I feel. And I have a little sticky note on my computer that says what each phase means as Jen described them. So like for new moon, I wrote rest, evaluation, research. For the first quarter moon, waxing, I write starting, brainstorming, planning. The full moon, I wrote connecting, get out there, collaboration, communication. And for the last quarter moon, aka waning, I wrote detailed work, projects to completion, tying up loose ends. So yeah, I'm easing into the lunar logic. What about you? I am super curious if you're an astrology nut or an astronaut or an astro noob like me. Let me know on Instagram. And for a really, really awesome recap of this chat, plus a heck of a lot more that'll make eating plants and loving planets more like a party, hit up partyinmyplants.com/191.